everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Tom, it's the end of September, the last day officially of our summer rainy season, the monsoon season, and we may get kind of a last hurrah.
Today.
Today, yeah.
Well, what is your prediction for after the official end? Are we going to get some after the official end rain possibly in October?
I think we will.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think it's coming. All right, it's Buckmaster. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's Friday, the final day of September, September 30th, 2022. Our radio station's KVOI, 1030 The Voice, for Tucson's trusted source of news and talk. Our worldwide live listening, we're very proud that we have all of our programs. I'd say 99% of all the programs we've done since we launched the radio project in January of 2011 on my website, buckmastershow.com. When we do our live line, that's the telephone interviews or folks calling in, and we do encourage you to call in because we will be talking about everybody's favorite topic these days, water. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, the live line number 790-2040. Our media partners, thank you to Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com. And because Dylan's with me in studio, I can thank him eye to eye. Thank you, Dylan, for your support.
Well, thank you for yours, sir.
The Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, that's our friend Dan Shear and his team. We thank Dan. We thank Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Dylan Smith is with us in studio for our newsmaker interview today. And a quick little bit about Dylan. He's editor, publisher, and founder of the online news service, which is doing very well, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is president of the Arizona Press Club, immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion's an acronym for local independent online news publishers. Did I get that right?
Yeah, close enough.
What's different? what's different? Are you no longer
exactly
the president?
Right.
You're still the president of the Arizona Press Club.
For the moment, yes.
All right, let's welcome John Kamik.
We haven't had a coup yet.
There you go. Let's welcome John Kamik, director of Tucson Water. Tucson Water serves nearly one quarter of a million people. Thank you. I thought that wasn't right. Almost three quarters of a million people in the Tucson Basin. Tucson Water has implemented one of the most successful, notable water conservation programs in the country. Mr. Kamik, Director Kamik, previously served as director of the Marano Water for 7 years, but he's been with Tucson Water off and on actually since the late 1990s. He's a longtime water leader in Arizona. He's on Governor Ducey's Water Augmentation, Innovation, and Conservation Committee and also sits on the board of directors for the National Water Reuse Association and a director of the Arizona Water Association Board. In other words, he knows a lot about water. Hey, John, thank you for coming in.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
So I get the feeling there's no panic at Tucson Water about what we're hearing out of the Colorado River shortage. And why is that? Why should we feel like we can kind of breathe a little easier here in Tucson?
That's a great question. This comes up often. We're going back, let's say, 20 years when Tucson decided to make the transition to using our Colorado River water and storing it into the aquifer as a bank account. Once we started doing that, we realized the flexibility it gave us because we weren't just bringing Colorado River water to meet daily demands like a surface water treatment plant does in Maricopa County and the areas around that. We were bringing in the water that we knew we would need to recharge our aquifers to meet the demands of the community, but it allowed us to have that bank account in the aquifer to store excess for when times of shortage would eventually occur. And then, you know, fast forward, we knew by 2007, the lakes started to go down. Then you fast forward again, climate change is affecting the whole Colorado River Basin. There's less and less runoff, and we're seeing where the trajectory is going. And it became more and more important that the decision to go to Aquifer Recharge for this community was the right decision at the time.
So we've got a bank account of what, 5.5 years, I'm hearing, of excess Colorado River water?
That's exactly right. So we've been able to put away about, over the last several years, about a third of our annual allotment, which is 144,191 acre feet, in storage. And so we can draw off that to meet our demands. But we also have other waters that we use in the community and have been using for a long time, recycled effluent in our one of our largest reclaimed water programs in the state of Arizona, as well as we're getting into green stormwater infrastructure throughout the community as well. So we're diversifying our portfolio as much as we can, and we still have the large legal entitlement to groundwater, not only in the Tucson Basin, but also in Avra Valley.
Dylan, one more quick follow-up with John before I give it over to you. That kind of begs the question of, yes, it's nice we've got the 5.5 year excess, but we are in maybe a 1,200-year event here with this water shortage. So it kind of begs the question, what happens if things don't improve drastically in 5.5 years?
Well, we'll be using a combination of our, well, one, we're not cut off from the canal. So we are still getting our entitlement. We're still scheduled to get our entitlement in 2023. There will be a reconsultation on the river that's scheduled for 2026. So contracts will be adjusted. And that was to, adjust for what's called the structural deficit of when allocations were originally assigned on the lower basin in the Colorado River. It was done during a wet period, so everybody got more allocation than what naturally was occurring. So there's going to be an adjustment related to that, but now you add on an adjustment related to the lack of runoff that's been occurring in the basin as well.
So we're not going to be out of water in 5.5 years.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Okay, let's turn it over to Dylan Smith of Tucson Sentinel.
Follow up on that a bit. It would take one heck of a cut for us to be losing out, on 2/3 of what our allotment is. And we could, at our current usage rates, run on 1/3. If it were that drastic, we would still be where we're at as far as water usage goes. We wouldn't be saving anymore, but
that's exactly right. What triggers us and other communities like us to start to be creative, we've had a conservation ethic, which has been huge for us for the last several decades.
Beat the Peak campaign started with Beat the Peak.
And it rolls on today. One of the nice facts I like to share when I'm either talking locally or nationally is the water consumed by the Tucson population today is roughly the same in the late 90s. As where we were in the late 1980s, early 1990s.
Even though we've got way more people, right?
200,000 more people. So that's all attributable to conservation. And that's why we keep, that end zone keeps getting further and further. The way we can water manage with our community has been fantastic.
So I imagine there are things that individuals can still be doing to save a little bit of water, like more rainwater harvesting, just being a little bit more careful. But you can get into that, but the meat of my question is, what are we doing to encourage businesses and industrial users to be a little more water conscious? Because they don't get charged tiered rates, and why don't they?
Well, commercial properties actually do have a tiered structure. It's just not an inclining block structure that
like residential.
It's a different tiered structure. The policy, when that was set up at the time, is that businesses in general need a certain amount of daily water to perform their business, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's an industrial process or something like that. So the tiered structure for commercial is based on your winter average. So you have a winter average, but if you go beyond the winter average in the months of May through October, there's tiers where you do pay higher because it's assumed that it's probably related to outdoor discretionary use for landscaping around your business or something like that. So, but we have this question's come up recently. It's been brought up by a couple council members, and it's been being talked about at our Citizens Water Advisory Committee. So we are looking at and plan to look at different commercial structures in the future to see if there maybe is a better trigger for more conservation. But a business needs a water for a business to do its business. So mm-hmm. there's always a baseline that's depending on what the type of business is that they're going to use.
Yeah. Speaking of water rates, you're looking to raise them a bit.
We are. We just had a study session this week where water rates, as well as some other fees and charges from other city departments, were presented to mayor and council. We initially had a proposal for water rates that kicked off in March of 2020. However, March of 2020 was a different time.
That's when everything went south.
Everything went south. And one of the first decisions we made at the city of Tucson was to put a halt on the 2020 rate increases that were proposed. So we've gone several years now since 2019 without any rate changes. And now we're coming back with a four-year proposal.
Some people have been kind of jumping up and down with some numbers about that. Like, you want to increase the cap water surcharge by 30%. That sounds like a lot of money, but what does that actually mean?
Well, the great question. Cap water changes in their pricing on an annual basis. So with the tiered reductions that are occurring on Lake Mead, the lower priority users end up being blocked from being customers of CAP. So we have what's called a municipal and industrial contract, which is one of the higher priority contracts on the CAP canal. And so we'll be one of the last people cut on the canal. But CAP has fixed costs and operating costs. When you have a smaller customer base, those costs end up getting slid over to the municipal and industrial contractors. So cities and towns that have contracts like the city of Tucson, we all see our rates go up. So that adjustment is to help keep pace with the changing rate.
But that's not talking about, at my house, my water rate going up 30%. That's just a tiny slice of my water bill, right?
That's exactly right.
So how much would that be out of my pocket for an average homeowner?
Average homeowner is about an 8 CCF a month, and it's at 70 cents right now. So that's $5.60 you pay towards receiving CAP water. So if it goes to a dollar, it's going to go from $5.60 to $8 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. John Kamik is with us from Tucson Water, where he is the director. This would be a good time to take a pause and open up our phone line, 790-2040. If you have a question about water, now would be a great time to get to the guy who is at the top of Tucson Water. And why don't we take a call on line one before we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery? Matt has called us. Matt, you were John Kamik.
Yeah, hey, John, recently the newspaper published that the mayor was in Washington before a Senate hearing with Senator Kelly, and she and him got to discuss the PFAS issue as it affects Tucson. With regards to the IJA bill that had passed and projects, just out of curiosity, mentioned that there was $50 million in costs that we have basically accrued to date. Just out of curiosity, how are you dealing with that, and what are the prospects for hopefully getting some of the congressional bill money to help relieve our costs, or getting money from any of the defendants that are involved in the case on PFAS? Thank you.
And John, before you answer that, just to clarify, folks may not know what PFAS is. We're talking about the PFAS contamination, the cleanup effort. It's a longstanding pollution of groundwater in Midtown, north of DM and at the Air National Guard base adjoining Tucson International Airport. And this is from, it's basically kind of the contaminant is from the foam that is used by airports to put out airplane fires. So go ahead, John, with the, I think Matt was saying, can we get $50 million of that money or something?
Yeah. Well, we're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so, this is a great question, because this is the other challenge that we have locally besides, you know, the changing conditions on the Colorado River that's going to affect our imported water over time. PFAS is an issue in Tucson. It's an issue in almost every major city that has an airport or a defense base. They're finding it contaminating groundwater supplies. Tucson being unique, we do not have an outlet to an ocean. We don't have running rivers. So whatever PFAS has been brought into this basin, and like you mentioned, Bill, is mm-hmm. done predominantly with the military and the airport establishments, is essentially stays here. It doesn't disappear. And these are long life chemicals that don't easily biodegrade.
And they're migrating.
And then, yeah, once they get into water, then they follow the flow of water. So groundwater does move. It moves around. So there's two defined plumes, one from Davis Monthan, north-northwest, leaving the base and going into what we call the Central Tucson Basin, as well as off of the Tucson International Airport area where the Arizona Air National Guard is also co-located. There's a plume there that's been commingling now with the original TARP plume. For people who might remember that was the original Superfund site that was created in the early 1990s to deal with TCE contamination.
And that's why you were originally hired and how you wound up in Tucson. You were hired by Tucson Water to come out to deal with TCE in the late 90s.
Well, come out to be part of that because yeah. I did have a lot of experience in soil and groundwater contamination mm-hmm. when I did consulting in the Detroit area. But also as a hydrologist, it was when we were making the turn to do aquifer recharge and recovery. So a lot of the main projects I worked on initially was the original expansion of our CAP recharge operations out in Navarre Valley, as well as our reclaim operations. But going back to the PFAS question, though, to answer Matt's question right away, yeah, we are pursuing bipartisan infrastructure money to help deal with it. We have over 25 wells that we've taken offline over the last several years that have had impacts of PFAS or PFAS compounds showing up. So it is constraining us in some parts of town. One of the first projects we have is we have 7 wells in the northwest side of Tucson, and we're put in an application to the Arizona Water Infrastructure Financing Authority, which is handling the bipartisan money, to build some treatment plants on the northwest side of town to be able to bring those wells back into service to meet the demands of the community in that area.
Dylan, before you do a follow-up, and I know you do have a follow-up on this, but we do need to take a break right here. What would you think we were going to talk about next?
Well, you know, I am feeling a little bit peckish, so I'm torn between satisfying my sweet tooth and having a sandwich for lunch.
For Mona's Danish Bakery, John, that's one of our great sponsors. Mona's is located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle. John, do you like bakery goods?
I love bakery goods.
What could you go for right now? What would be very tempting, maybe with a cup of coffee or... What would you go for?
I would go for a cheese Danish, but I also like any kind of like cream-filled Long John or,
about a chocolate croissant?
That sounds wonderful.
Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch. They do breakfast. Oh, they do a great breakfast. 6:30 in the morning when they open the doors, people are waiting. I don't blame them. The doors open at 7 on Sunday, and they are taking now Monday, a well-deserved day off. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website, and again, they're the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Everybody's getting the word on Mona's. We were up there last weekend, very busy, so I see why people are right there when they open up. They get all the choice of everything just coming out of the oven, and that bakery case looks so tempting. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. John Kamik is with us. John is the director of Tucson Water. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. A lot of good listener reactions. So we've got some questions we want to get through. This one came in on my Facebook page. John, a listener wants to know about the Glen Canyon Dam. Would getting rid of it reduce leakage and waste, since Lake Powell is, this listener thinks, at near the Deadpool level already?
Well, that's an interesting question. I have to admit, I haven't studied the effects of what removing the Glen Canyon Dam would do. So, yeah, unfortunately, I can't talk too much about it. I focused on what our legal entitlements are to getting Colorado River in Tucson.
Line one, Mary Lou wants to speak with John Kamik. Go ahead, Mary Lou.
Hi, John. There's a water station or pump or whatever on Tanque Verde Road and Houghton Road. And do you know how many gallons of water they take out there? And is that water sent over to the south side?
Mary Lou, sorry. We have booster stations and tanks all over the valley, and I know you're referencing that area on that part of town, but yeah, without specific knowledge, I'm not going to be able to give you an answer. But no, but the water that Tucson Water serves on the east side is predominantly developed on the east side, or it's recovered water from Avra Valley that has moved through our system.
We should talk, Dylan, about reuse with John. That's an area that John is also very familiar with. When we talk about reuse, we're talking actually about a couple of things, aren't we, John?
Yeah, reuse can come in different forms. Traditional reuse, what we've been doing here in the Tucson area for almost 40 years, we should probably have a birthday party for this, is the development of the reclaimed water system. So the reclaimed water system takes the city's ownership of effluent, a portion of it, and it's been distributing it to large turf uses throughout our community now for 40 years. And in 2023, we'll be able to celebrate that. So that's traditional non-potable reuse of treated, highly treated wastewater.
Public golf course watering.
Schools and parks. Yeah, right. Most of your schools and parks throughout the community have grass because of the reclaimed water system.
But what if we were to use that, serve that treated effluent to homeowners? Would that put a significant dent into our water situation?
That is always a tool in the toolbox, not only for Tucson, but for communities throughout the state of Arizona. There's already a couple communities in Maricopa County looking at what's referred to as direct potable reuse, where you take the highly treated water that traditionally comes out of the wastewater plant, and then you pass it through an advanced treatment plant for drinking water, and basically remove all the chemicals, remove any remaining organics, and purify the water, and then it can be delivered back into the system. There was a prohibition against that in the state of Arizona, but it was removed in the 2019 agreement on the drought contingency plan.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that prohibition has been lifted for the last couple of years, and now you're seeing communities throughout Arizona actually look at this as part of their long-range water resource planning portfolio, is to maybe cut in direct potable reuse over time.
If that were to happen, would you be taking that water and just directly cycling it back into the stream that gets sent to homeowners, or would it make sense to recharge it and, you know, essentially let Mother Earth filter it a little bit more by it hanging around that way?
That's a great question, Dylan. It would be a combination of both if we ever did it in southern Arizona, because a lot of our effluent is recharged. Then we do get groundwater credits for putting it back in the aquifer, and that's how the way it comes from, in our case, the Pima County water reclamation facilities. So, but when you do direct potable reuse, you can do it in a couple ways. You can recover where you've been banking effluent in the aquifer, as well as doing that direct, what's called pipe-to-pipe, where you would still pass it through a highly advanced treatment plant and meet the conditions, show that it demonstrate it, and put it directly back into the drinking water
supply. Because there are some people who kind of freak out a little bit by water that's going from your toilet to your tap.
That's exactly
but,
right.
Yeah. But in reality, there's only so much water on Earth, and at some point, the water you're drinking has been in somebody's toilet over the last...
I can guarantee that, yes.
There's only so much of it to go around.
Well, and here's a good analogy. What happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas. It ends up in Lake Havasu, ends up in the CAP canal, and ends up stored in an aquifer in Tucson.
That's right. So there'd be quite a, you know, selling the whole toilet to tap thing. You know, it'd be a sales job. People would have to kind of get used to the concept.
We've done a lot of focus groups, not Tucson Water
and
directly.
How'd that go, the focus group?
Well, with the Water Reuse Association, which we're part of, we've been doing focus groups nationally across this. And what we're finding out is most people under the age of 50 completely accept direct potable reuse because these people believe and trust in technology. The older generation, they still want to see that environmental buffer is what we call it. You put it in the aquifer, you pull it out, something magical happens, really not much, but it makes people feel better. But the younger generation says, if you're going to treat something using technology and highly purify water, why would you put it back in the environment where it can be dirtied again? Mm-hmm. So just give it to me directly. So that's an interesting paradigm shift that's been occurring.
And of course, we need to talk about desalinization. Such an expensive proposition, John.
Yeah, desalination from the ocean is always an expensive proposition, and it's because
especially when you're not on the ocean.
Exactly right. But there's different ways to do different types of desalination. What Arizona has been looking at the last several years in the Governor's Water Augmentation Council is we have a lot of aquifers in the state of Arizona that you can't farm or people don't live in. It's the flyover aquifers, I call it. Because the water is brackish, because it has some type of salt level in it that makes it unusable. But brackish water can have what's called a total dissolved solid, your calcium, magnesium, your sodium, that is over 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 part per million. Desalinating seawater on average is around 30,000 part per million.
Whoa, so it's hugely less.
So if you desal brackish water in the state, not too far from the CAP canal, you could do it a lot cheaper, augment the canal for whatever we get cut in the state, and still deliver everybody's contracted amount of water. So I'm always in favor of keeping it local, keeping it under control, and there's a lot of brackish opportunities that'd be a lot cheaper than going to desalination of ocean water.
So that issue is not just merely the idea of, well, we might build a pipeline to the Gulf of California or over the mountains to San Diego and start pumping that water to Arizona. We could maybe do a smaller scale version of that here in Arizona.
Correct.
With water that is here.
Yeah, correct. We still have a lot of opportunities in the aquifers in Arizona that are currently underutilized because of having some type of brackish component to it that can be recovered and put to use. And once it's put to use in a community like Tucson, it ends up in your urban water cycle and it ends up an effluent that you can store for future use here locally. So there's still good benefits.
Where are these areas, this brackish water?
So mostly west of Phoenix. There's a lot of brackish water in the northeast corner of the state as well. But predominantly, you know, west of the Buckeye, Avondale area and all those areas where there's kind of open lands.
So the cost, John, sounds like it would be doable, like compared to like ocean water or something.
I would believe so immensely if we could do something in-state, not too far from the current infrastructure that people have paid for, called mm-hmm. the CAP canal, and add to the canal directly. I see that penciling out in the long term.
Still in a very expensive long-term proposition, though.
Yep.
And something that would require a lot of power on an ongoing basis, right?
A lot of power, but a lot less power than trying to do desalination directly from the ocean.
So, John, the big question is how much sustainability. I mean, we can't just close Tucson, Arizona to all newcomers, but the big question, John, is sustainability for the future.
Yep. Sustainability is a combination of a variety of things. Conservation is a huge part of that, and our mayor and council and councils of the past have been very supportive of conservation measures. Talked about, you know, we have 200,000 more people here, but we're using the same amount of water that we used in the late 1980s, early 1990s. That's attributable directly to our conservation ethic and people understanding that they live in a desert and they don't need to have lawns like they do in suburban Chicago or Detroit. You know, they can get by with rocks and cactuses. It's actually a little more sustainable, mm-hmm. right? So a combination of using conservation, continuing the conservation ethic, which is a change of technology with that. We've seen toilet volumes go down over years, as well as maximizing our use and being flexible with our water resources, whether it's imported through CAP or locally established here by reuse of effluent or stormwater and rainwater and all those things.
John, the council's talked about something called net zero for projects in the future. They would be facing tougher water use measures. What does that mean, net zero?
That is a new concept, and we're studying that, and we're going to be coming back to council with some information at our October 18th study session on that. Net zero is a concept where new development is not drawing or adding to the overall water demand for a specific area or community. And that can be done in different ways. It can be done with like low impact development where all the storm water is retained within a master plan community, which would offset its irrigation, so there wouldn't be use there. But also the internal water, since we do have a reclaimed water system here, most, you know, the water is returned and still owned by the city of Tucson and stored back in the aquifer, so you have that as well. But when there's not a balance where it's not equal, either based on design or based on consumptive use, one possible option is you pay an offset credit of what your annual demand is expected to be on the system, and then that fee or that offset credit can then be applied to other places within the utility to save water someplace else.
And that's been used in other cities, hasn't it? Especially in California.
It's a new topic that's coming up to try to maintain balance and try to extend a community's water portfolio.
Dylan, anything else before we let John go?
Well, let's talk for a minute because it does, you know, people's discussions tends to move towards the worst case scenario, and we haven't really touched on that. You know, if both of those dams hit Deadpool status, you know, basically that affects not just our water, but our power, but specifically, what are we going to do about water if we are no longer getting hardly any water through the CAP canal? What are we going to do? 5 years from now, if this drought continues this terribly, we're going to have to look at some serious things, aren't we?
Well, And it's a good question. I mean, the likelihood, I think, you know, it's a hypothetical, but the government's going to jump in.
But that's, you know, when people start talking about this is, you know, the questions that start being, you know,
the end
top
game
of mind.
Yeah. People wonder about it.
If terrible things happen,
sure,
what are we going to do?
Yeah. Again, our focus is going to be on what we've done well. You know, so we've done aquifer storage. We're doing effluent reuse. We have different ways to do effluent reuse if we need to. We have stormwater capture and possible reuse for aquifers. one thing that a lot of people don't know is one of the first major water strategies that the city of Tucson did occurred in the early 1970s, and that was to purchase over 22,000 acres of farmland in Avra Valley, and that's why we have a presence in Avra Valley. And they retired those farmlands in preparation for a shortage or dwindling groundwater supplies. So we have millions of acre feet of entitled groundwater in a very good aquifer out in Avra Valley, very clean aquifer that we still have access to, and that is all inside the city of Tucson's portfolio for water resources, that if we go and we start drawing some amount from that groundwater allotment, it gets brought into the community. And then, like I talked about, you know, the urban water cycle, as we continue to grow that, as we continue to look for ways to use less water. But when we use less water, returning that water back to our environment where it's recapturable locally and use it again are all those things that will extend Tucson's life indefinitely.
Well, people often accuse our council of not being forward-thinking, but somebody back in the 1970s was certainly thinking about that.
Yes, yes.
All right, John Kamik, thank you very much for coming in. And if people have any questions about Tucson Water, you're trying, I know, always to work on customer service, right?
Absolutely.
When people call, they want to speak to a live human being.
That's right.
All right, John, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Dylan, stick around. I've got a couple of quick questions for you after we take our break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Dylan Smith is here from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, in TucsonSentinel.com, you've got a new Arizona poll that came out. It's a pretty well-respected poll that's done by the Marist College. I think the bottom line with all these polls, they're all very close, aren't they?
They are very, very close. And in most of them, there might be someone leading in the poll, but the difference between the candidates would be, less than the margin of error. polls aren't exact measurements of things. Like this poll has Mark Kelly up by how much was it again?
2%?
Yeah, he's up. He's up by 2 points, but the margin
with
of
the
error
margin,
is
yeah.
So, say 5%. I don't remember the details of mm-hmm. this precise mm-hmm. poll. So what that says is he could actually be trailing by 3.
Right.
It's polls are a measurement of a spread, not an exact point, which is something that people have to keep in mind.
The same poll.
Not exactly definitive because, it's not people voting that you can count specific votes and end up with a total. But all of the polls that we've seen over the past month about the races in Arizona have been very, very close. It's going to be, a not just a long night on election night, but very likely a long week because this is going to be one that where, really, again, every single vote is going to be counted and will matter in the outcome.
Well, Dylan, at the top of the ticket for Arizona with the governor, the attorney general, secretary of state, and who am I missing? But they're all election deniers on the Republican side. So, I mean, what if the vote count shows they lost? Do you think they're going to accept that?
Well, some of these candidates have been pretty blunt about the fact that they will not accept and respect the outcome of the election if they lose. It's a kind of a priming things. They're already saying if they lose, that has to be fraud. So if that's the outcome where they do indeed lose, say if Carrie Lake loses the governor's race, we are going to see more turmoil and demands for, ridiculous audits, even though Arizona actually does audit its own elections. More nonsense and conspiracist fantasies about Lord knows. I mean, after what we saw with the ridiculous claims that flew around after the 2020 election about bamboo ballots and, Argentina and Germany and this and that and the other. Lord knows what they'll come up with.
Quickly, Dylan, got about 2 minutes left, but this is pretty darn important. Pima County will get $48 million for opioid education, I guess would be the word, and kind of maybe even intervention, a part of a settlement. This is over 18 years. This is a huge national settlement.
Yeah, this is the chunk that we get locally out of one of the settlements. This is the one against Johnson & Johnson for their role in pushing opioids readily that so many people were horribly addicted. Just about, I think, every state participated in this settlement. And so the state of Arizona gets a pretty nice chunk of money. And the cut going to Pima County over basically the next two decades is almost $50 million. So, not a ton of money every year, but it's going to allow them to tackle some programs especially distribute Narcan, which has astounding effects at saving lives, and having that readily available will give people who would otherwise die a second chance, and getting some more education to people, supporting some of the ongoing efforts they already have for intervention, and the impact of the opioid epidemic over the last couple of decades, pushed so much by these major manufacturers of it, has such long-term impacts that it may well, take the next two decades to really try and fix things.
When you started TucsonSentinel.com about a dozen years ago, you really are and were a pioneer in this whole local independent online news publishing. You go now to any major city and a lot of medium-sized and even smaller cities, and you see this particular model being used.
Yeah. When I founded the Sentinel back in 2009, there were about not even three dozen local news organizations like we were, locally focused, nonprofit, purely set up to do good reporting. And now we're members of an organization called the Institute for Nonprofit News, which was set up not long after. And we joined that in 2011. At that point, I think there were 40 members of that organization all over the country. And now there are 400 some.
Unbelievable.
I helped found Lion Publishers, local independent online news publishers, which is both, you know, for-profit and non-profit, small local startup news organizations. We now have more than 400 members of that group as well. There's a little bit of overlap, of course, in between them, but it's really, you know, a whole lot of people have figured out that we need to change the news business, get it away from, you know, the legacy chain ownership that has unfortunately really, it's choking the life out of local news all over the country.
And, it is. Yep.
Got to change it.
All right, Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, good luck. You'll be anchoring next Friday's show, and all the best to you.
Okay. I promise to do a good job.
I know you will do a good job. We're going to take a break right here, Weekend Watch, with Mr. Matt Russell right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions.
come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
I don't know about you, but I am ready for the weekend. When I hear Weekend Watch theme, stir it up, baby. I know it is Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Great place to take an autumn getaway, just about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. What a perfect time of year to get into the land of enchantment. The golden color of the aspens now turning in the high country. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for information on where to stay and all sorts of things to do. Here he is, award-winning Tucson publicist, food and beverage writer, Mr. Matt Russell. How are you, Matt?
Well, I'm stirring it up as prescribed, Bill. It's Friday.
Well, there was a song way back when, At the Hop, and things are happening at the Hop Shop this weekend.
They sure are. You know what? When a small business celebrates an anniversary, you know, it's always good news to me. And it doesn't have to be a 10-year or a 25-year to make news. And, Bill, that's why I'm excited for the 7th anniversary celebration at the Tucson Hop Shop all weekend long. Now, this craft beer and wine bar, bottle shop, and urban beer garden, they've been going strong for 7 years, and you can join the weekend party starting tonight at 6. They're going to have the Fat Noodle food truck. They're going to have some live music starting at 7. Then tomorrow, it's more live music and the curry pot food truck at 6. And then Sunday, even more live music starting at 4. Some of the best beer and wine in town, an amazing staff, Tucson Hop Shop. It's on Dodge, just north of Fort Lowell, so swing by and say happy anniversary.
One of the staples of Weekend Watch this time of year is the Oktoberfest.
Yes, and the celebrations, Bill, continue all weekend long. Now, one in particular on Sunday afternoon at 2, they have a charitable angle that I thought was fitting for the season. So at the Hut on 4th Avenue, they're going to be hosting an Oktoberfest celebration with food vendors and live music. They're going to have a commemorative stein that you're going to take home. You're going to get some beer, of course, and a pie eating contest, all kinds of fun. And all proceeds from the event, not a percentage, all proceeds will go to the charity More Than a Bed for supporting children in foster care. So that really speaks to me. Tickets start at $30 per person, and you can get yours now at OktoberfestAZ.com.
Tankaverde Ranch just screams of Tucson heritage, Matt Russell.
You know, it sure does. And this weekend is a manifestation of that scream. is the season for wine dinners. Tankaverde Guest Ranch, they're going to be hosting a spectacular one on Sunday night at 6, right there in their beautiful event barn. You're going to get a 5-course dinner. Each course is going to be paired with a premium wine from Hope Family Wines in Paso Robles. Now, I'm told the Hope family has been farming in Paso Robles for more than 30 years, and now it's really considered to be the top wine-growing region within the Central Coast. So there's limited seating, so call 731-5565 to make your reservation.
I love that area. We were over there about a year ago in the Paso Robles central area of California, Cambria by the sea. It's just so beautiful over there.
All right.
Have a great weekend, Matt Russell. Thank you so much for everything you do for our community.
My pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, everybody here at KVOI, including my engineer and producer, Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team that makes us feel so comfortable at Bustos Media Tucson. Be well, everybody. Stay safe. Hope you have a lovely weekend.